Recording. All right, Sam, take it away.
Sorry, are we 31 today?
Episode 31 today, yeah.
Okay. Hey, everyone. Welcome to 30. Sorry. Give me a second. Hey, everyone. Welcome to episode 31 of Business Therapy. I'm Sam Joshak, and as always, I'm here with my co-host, Jonathan Adams. Today on the show, we have Martin Barrow. Welcome to the show, Martin.
Hi, guys. How are you doing?
He's coming today to seek advice about his company. I'm going to let him go ahead and kick us off. So why don't you tell the audience a little bit about yourself, your background, a little bit more about what brought you to business therapy today?
Yeah, absolutely. So my name is Martin Barrow. I'm originally South African, been living in the US for 10 years now. It's where I started my professional career. I started off as a consultant, naturally got really curious about the startup industry. I started working for startups and then eventually found myself starting Mobux. Or mobile UX. Mobux is all about creating interactive mobile experiences for the modern age. And we're here today because we are seeking advice on how we can transition from being an agency to being a B2B SaaS product.
That's great. Great background. Thanks, Martin. Yeah, and I think for the audience, the first thing I would ask is we'd love to know a little bit more context about how you ended up becoming an agency and what's bringing on the desire to switch.
Absolutely. So being a small company, we naturally don't have a large team or a large amount of resources. So we're actually 100% bootstrapped up until this point. Our go-to-market strategy started off with startups. So we decided, hey, this is kind of who we really want to build it for. It's the low resource individuals. And we've seen that B2B SaaS model with kind of a low monthly cost with the wide user base being very successful versus a very, very high cost base and a low user base. So we really quickly realized that although our target market was startups, they were not the best place to start when you didn't really have a full platform available to them. It wasn't very scalable. And we ended up just kind of being their in-house marketing team, building these experiences. So we quickly switched to big brands after that. And ran into a whole host of new problems. Gatekeepers needing to kind of be a certain level of tech accreditation, all of these kind of long lead times. So the next idea was, let's work with agencies. Agencies have access to these big brands. They don't nearly have the same lead times and tech requirements. And if we sell to one agency, they work with multiple companies. So, hey, we could just kind of bigger bang for our buck. So we started working with agencies and that process naturally led us to kind of really become a subcontractor agency. And so we built these experiences for agencies and, you know, directly for brands, but we ended up customizing a whole host of things. And so we ended up just being a very custom agency. So fantastic from a revenue generation perspective, but very difficult for us to kind of really hone in on that product. And definitely feel like a little bit of our kind of our story and our focus shifted away from the core product and more about chasing, you know, brands and revenue.
Was there an interim period when you had a product and yet the market kept pushing you back to being, or not back, but pushing you to be an agency? Or were you developed, like, where were you on developing your product as this process was unfolding?
Yeah, so we couldn't really find a natural competitor to us. So there was no way for us to kind of, you know, adopt their product as an agency and kind of run tests with users. So I found a couple of softwares and used them, perhaps maybe not the way they were specifically designed, and very quickly found out that there were tons of limitations to kind of what we were trying to test. So that wasn't really a great test. We didn't have the resources to go and put together anything that was truly customer facing. So our next strategy was, what happens if we try to create a process kind of through some surveys of what would a user would do in terms of a drag and drop, and then have our developer kind of just create those experiences under these kind of conditions. So that's how we started off. But every brand saw that and was like, this is so cool. And then can you do all of these other things? Because that's actually how we really need it to be done. And so we found ourselves kind of still, you know, tangentially touching our core product, which is, you know, mobile, instant, interactive, but ended up just customizing each experience, which really kind of prevented us from building a core product per se. But yeah, so that's kind of how we really struggled. And as I said, we've been fortunate to work with some very awesome clients, but ended up just building incredibly custom experiences for them all.
And you don't want to be an agency?
Not in particular, no. I have been an agency. I started as a consultant, so I know what that life's about. And for me, what really drives me and gets me really excited is about solving problems at scale rather than solving just specific individual problems. I love the space, and I'm nothing against the agency model, but it's just not really where my heart lies. My heart lies really in kind of creating a product and really iterating on a product, and that being the focus rather than the individual needs on a case by case basis.
And then I'll push it to sure. Sam. And what's the problem that you're trying to solve? What's the problem that the market has?
Yeah. So our initial intent was, we kind of found this insight around that the majority of online marketing content is just not really built to be consumed by mobile, right? And this affects conversion. This affects ROI. Yet when you look at the data, over 70% of interactions with consumers to brands happen on mobile, and over 50% of transactions now happen on mobile. So essentially, the consumers are on mobile, but the consumer experience typically sucks. And that's really what we've been trying to address. Me, having worked in a startup as a marketer, I felt particularly impassioned to address that for the marketer at a startup, but also being a consumer felt, I would just love some better experiences with brands. So it was kind of a personal problem for me, because I'd been on both sides of the equation, and I understand the frustration of the consumer, but I also understand the restrictions of the marketer. And so we were trying to build a product that really created that experience in harmony.
Mm-hmm. So that's a great summary of the problem. And it sounds like, generally summarizing your story, you found a great problem, you've got a great solve, and you've been barreling ahead and you're building all this momentum. So I want to zoom out for a minute and kind of walk us through how you were feeling and how you're feeling now. Like, when did this tension start building? You knew you wanted to have a scalable product, but like a lot of startups, I think this is a very common story where revenue and chasing revenue and learning and the excitement of kind of making those first dollars and being self-sustaining is a huge draw. So was there a time where that was exciting, or the whole time you were kind of feeling like, we're compromising our scalable product vision, or has it just been recently? I guess walk us through your personal feelings and how has this tension been building, and where are we at now, like on that timeline?
Yeah, absolutely. So, I think our intention from day one was always to create a B2B product, and our go-to-market strategy kind of had to shift as we learned. We were very lucky to be accepted to an incubator program called Antler here in New York. And through that process, that's where we learned kind of that initial learnings. Hey, startups are kind of who we wanted to be, but that didn't work out. And big brands weren't really the place to go. So we'd initially just started this agency model. I think, like most brands in the last 2 years, COVID had a very, very big impact on us. Obviously I wish COVID didn't happen, but if it did happen, I wished it was 1 year later, because I think we would have actually been in a perfect position to take a huge advantage of the transition from in-person to online. But one of the first areas that dried up, at least for the first 6 to 12 months, was marketing spend. And we were considered marketing technology. So I think that was the biggest driver for us to switch to the agency model, in combination with trying to just get people that were willing to try our product, right? And, I think we definitely lost a little bit of sight of what we were really trying to prove once we started the conversations and being like, well, Armani wants to work with us. Why wouldn't we do what they want? It's such a big brand. We get to put their logo on our website. And so I think it was really just kind of came down to two problems. COVID kind of forced us to chase revenue, but also these big brands, they're kind of interested. And, it wasn't like from day one, hey, we want you to change. It started off like this. And then, how agency, conversations work. Well, but can we change just that? Okay. But then maybe also that, but then, and then when we look at the final product, it actually just morphed so much. you know, over kind of a 30-day period. So those were kind of really the two issues that we, you know, drove us to chase that model.
And then bringing you onto the show today, where are we at from a tension perspective? So you've been doing this for a bit. Are you feeling like the agency work is now actually becoming drudgerous? You're becoming concerned?
Yeah. Yeah. You know, I think it's taken me away from the core energy and, you know, of being a startup. It's so challenging to be a startup founder. You're responsible for your own motivation. You're responsible for a team's motivation. You're responsible to, you know, your clients. So there's a ton of responsibility, which I think has definitely kept me going. But yeah, the straying away from actually truly what we've been doing has been a huge strain. And that was actually one of the big drivers for me to kind of search out solutions and how I came across your guys' podcast, which is I actually don't know how to get out of this groove. You know, is it going backwards and then trying to find that initial fork in the road and go that route? Or do we just change, or, you know, do we start a new company with a new concept and start again? You know, we're kind of struggling with that and definitely feeling not only the pressure emotionally, but also kind of, you know, realizing that I've lost that a little bit of that initial vision that we set out to achieve. So,
yeah. So you're feeling it. And Jonathan,
definitely.
And Jonathan, I guess you're going to make a comment, then I'll.
How many people are in your team?
So we are now down to only 3 full-time people, and we have a part-time team internationally. Most of our dev resources are overseas, as well as our design resources. At the peak, we were closer to 10 people. So you can also definitely feel the pressure, right? All of these people joined with a certain vision, and, you know, over time, you know, have kind of realized that vision has shifted. And so, you know, a lot of the people that we'd hired bought into that vision rather than bought into just having a job, which mm-hmm. was, you know, very fortunate for us, but also has made us kind of, it's been difficult retaining those individuals that kind of fell in love with that vision, you know, so.
And the people that remain are all aligned on the vision now? Like, is anyone happy with being an agency?
No one's happy with being an agency. I think the people that have remained typically are perhaps maybe the most practical in terms of running a business, in terms of its fundamentals. Hey, businesses have to make money. And so I think they've kind of stuck around because of that. And, you know, 2 of us are the co-founders. So to be fair, that's kind of cheating. So really, we've only convinced one person to stick around from a more of an employee style relationship. And kind of keep going. You know, again, I think the person that stuck around is, although we haven't built the product, we are still building kind of results of the product of where would we'd want a client to be actually be able to build. We're still building those. And I think that has kept us going for the last 2 years. There's definitely been times where we've thought, maybe we just call it, guys. But then we kind of create a magical experience, and then you're like, no, but this is why we're in it. We want to enable people to be able to do this, not just ourselves.
Yeah. I mean, you see, even within yourself, it could be hard being clear on your objectives. So you said it's cheating with co-founders. Actually, 2 people, 3, it doesn't matter how many, being aligned on the energy that really matters to you. So like you said something very, it sounded very authentic, which was that, I mean, all of what you're saying is authentic, but very true to you, which was solving a problem at scale. And so if the activity you're doing doesn't feel like that, you're not going to be in harmony, you know, obviously.
Yeah. Yeah. And as you guys know, being an agency is not scalable. So, you know, it's tons of back and forth communication to tweak this and move that. And, you know, that really is a big energy suck. But, you know, what that has kept us going again is that end product and just seeing, you know, just, wow, we created that. And that's super powerful.
Yeah. And one thing I'd say, and you're already feeling it, which is great, but this comes up a lot where as soon as you start to feel that tension, or you start to feel that lack of motivation or that lack of energy, where you're having to push, you mentioned, for other people to keep the company together, this and that, it's not sustainable. And if you talk about lacking scalability, when you start to feel signs of that and you're pushing through your own barriers, or you don't have that excitement, especially in a small team in a startup situation, the company, it's not a matter of of if it will go down. It's just a matter of when. So you're right. Not doing anyone any favors by trying to push through that. And the one thing, and we're going to start talking about, you know, some of the strategies to how do you pivot and how do you move forward from here. And, but knowing that the door that you have to keep walking through that drains you and is not generating energy, but making you more fatigued, will never lead you to where the company needs to go. And that could be something that's surprising or may lead you in surprising directions. But if you have to compromise with yourself and you have to find that energy to push through resistance on a day-to-day basis, that path will never be the path that you'll be walking on over time.
Right. No, it's good to hear. You know, you're told time and time again, perseverance equals success, right? And I think going into being an entrepreneurial founder, believe that wholeheartedly and have really changed my opinion on that perspective as the process is going on. I don't think I gave the founders that I worked for in other startups enough credit for creating and building teams. You know, I thought, well, if you have perseverance as a trait, you're good to go. But realizing now that sometimes that's a bit, you know, sometimes you make futile decisions in the name of perseverance.
Yeah. If you beat your head against a brick wall long enough, you might actually make a dent in the wall and get through. That's perseverance of a form, I guess.
Right. Yeah, but maybe not the most effective way to get
through. No, not at all. There's no reason for it.
It's a huge call out. And it's one that I think it's a good thing to start the conversation about where do you go next? Because you have to absolve yourself of that. Then don't be a quitter. The persevere mentality is pervasive through business and the startup world in general. But we, especially here on the podcast, we've never seen that lead to a good outcome. You could maybe on paper eventually get to a good outcome, but it's always going to be at the cost of your life and the cost of your vitality. And that in itself is not sustainable and it's not scalable. So whatever business you wanted to make, if your body's reacting negatively, it's only going to bring down your team and it's going to make it that uphill battle. And perseverance is absolutely a lack of self-awareness in that context. And like you're bringing a lot of self-awareness into the conversation now. And I would say as an overarching container to foster that, because being self-aware and being honest on a day-to-day basis, if you start getting in the habit of persevering or pushing through that, like sort of tick in your mind every day, that's where you start to go on a path of really dark places and unhappiness. And that's not where you want to be as a startup founder.
Yes. We've been through that, you know, and, you know, I think that's what's driven a lot of the self-awareness and forced us to take a deeper look inside and say, right, you know, what are we going to do about it? And, you know, we're kind of very much at that pivotal point right now as a team. And me personally as a founder.
So I think it's a good segue then into what are we going to do about it? And I'll start the conversation by addressing some of your comments about, well, do we move backwards? Do we try to regress? I think especially when a business has momentum, we should definitely put ourselves in the mindset of it's only moving forward. It's only iterating. It's only evolving. It just might be in a different direction or a direction that you didn't foresee. Mm-hmm. But I don't think there's any reason to forsake any of the positive momentum that you've achieved. It's really a matter of how do we redirect that so that it can be channeled to a more positive place. And that may seem like you're moving backwards if you have to let go of some clients or you have to kind of pull back a little bit. But I really do think that my starting comment would be we're always moving forward with the company because the company is the combination of you and your coworkers and your small team's energy. So there's really at this size, it's an easier ship to steer than if you were like, you know, 100 person mm-hmm. small business or even worse, like a multi-thousand headcount corp where it's a little bit harder to steer that ship. Right. But you shouldn't be thinking, okay, we're going to have to do a fire sale here. We're going to have to burn down everything to the ground. It's just how do we start to align our principles so that the decisions are more honest? And that may mean on a day-to-day basis, there's more no's than there are yeses, but that should slowly guide the ship in a different direction versus having to say, okay, I have to do something drastic or do some massive pivot because people are enjoying working with you. They're giving you revenue. They're giving you energy. It's how do you take that and reinvest it appropriately while slowly making, you know, decisions that are more aligned with your values.
Right. No, that makes sense. And that's kind of actually a bit of a relief to hear. I think, naturally I'm a person that if something's not going away, it's a scorch and burn strategy, kind of gives you this ability to feel, okay, well now we can kind of restart fresh, but you're right. We, you know, we shouldn't give up on a lot of the goodwill and areas that we have won in.
Yeah.
You also have a natural tension point of your most startups before they're a company, there's a lot of phases that they're going through. You're a company already, you know, or a business because you're already selling a product. So that could really confuse things because I would always caution a startup to make sure that they've really honed in on the market problem they're trying to solve, the solution that they're bringing to that market, and are people willing to pay for that? Mm-hmm. And that's all hypothesis. And when you're in that phase, you don't want to confuse being in that phase with being a company, because if you do, then you start thinking of customer service, product management, all these things that have nothing to do with what your true objective is. Your objective is to test the market, you know, for the, you know, is there a real problem? Is your solution going to work? And will people pay, as I said? So you may have to bifurcate resources because the same people that are providing services as an agency may not be, you know, the ideal group to be looking at testing for a scalable solution. Because obviously one's much more bespoke than the other. But at the end of the day, it sounds to me like you haven't really had an opportunity to test your original hypothesis. You went straight to company, you know, without being able to first see, you know, if there was a scalable mobile experience that people can, you know, either through administrative tools or whatever it is, be able to create at scale, you know, would that satisfy a need?
Yeah. So then, and on top of that, I guess I would like to ask you about mechanically, and this is where we can get a little more prescriptive. What do you feel like is preventing you from shifting most of the time that you're spending in the business now to the more scalable activities that we're talking about? And I'm asking now, like, where are you blocked? Have you come to rely on the income? Do you feel overextended because you have commitments to clients? Like, where are we? Where are we at with that?
It's definitely a combination of relying on income and also just a little bit at a loss on how to effectively test the core product with almost no kind of money, right? We did try and fundraise early on, you know, just 1 or 2 months before the pandemic hit. And a lot of the feedback was, you know, you're too early. We kind of need you guys to go get some revenue and figure it out. So, you know, revenue was always in the back of our head. Okay, well, we've got to get some people to like be willing to pay for this. And then, you know, maybe we can work backwards on it. And you know, as we know, that's ended us in a different place. So yeah, I think part of that tension is really just tightness on resources and not really knowing, you know, well, not really having a clear idea on how we can go test that core product, because in our minds, a true test would have a bit more of a platform vibe, right? And platforms, as we know, cost money to build. And so that's kind of that natural tension that we had. So, you know, one of the other drivers for the agency was, well, if we can get people to buy the end product, we can convince investors that people want the end product, which is actually really what we're selling. And then the builder is really just the how, not really the why. And that was kind of our initial strategy, but that hasn't, you know, resonated with investors. And so now we're trying to figure out what other things that we kind of need to show beyond revenue and that purchase of that end experience.
Mm-hmm. So in terms of then the reliance on income, well, let's put funding strategies aside for a second, because that could be a whole separate work stream in a way.
Right.
And it may seem obvious, but I think sometimes a lot of people miss it as a next step, is have you sat down with the people, the founder, your co-founder, and the people in the company who are reliant on revenue and actually talked about what they need to be comfortable and what their revenue requirements are?
Yeah, we're extremely lean right now. We're, you know, every dollar is very much accounted for, and you know, we get by with what we've got. So we've tightened, let's say, the cost side of the business as much as possible. If we wanted to kind of keep the team as is, there is obviously a bit of an opportunity to let some more people go. But I do think that that would also kind of greatly affect our output ability in terms of also building, you know, the test and the product.
Right. So, you know, and you're aligned on what revenues you need. That's like a starting point to then kind of go to the second point of thinking about what is the activity you're engaged in now? Because if you're generating revenue to ultimately reinvest in building the product and you have to generate that revenue yourselves, there's two ways, at least I like to think about it, which is if I'm in the industry that I want to be in and I can actually engage with client work and make money while learning and testing and piloting in a way that's going to serve the build of your scalable product, then that has its own value that has to be weighed. Now, if you're not doing that as an extreme example, or like the learning curve has gone to zero, or like these clients or this book of business that you're currently maintaining is not giving you that learning or the ability to test or actually slowly or at any pace progress the actual building of the scalable product, then it's just basically a revenue source. So then you have to ask yourself, could we be generating the same amount of revenue for less time elsewhere? And then working on the company in tandem. And so let me pause there because hopefully that helps like separate the logic of where you should be allocating some of that time.
That absolutely does. Yeah. You know, now that we're thinking about it, it's kind of like we don't have as much time to spend on the actual product because you spend your time on the sales and the client management. And so that eats up most of your time. So you kind of find yourself a little bit in the chicken and the egg because you're focused on the revenue to keep the business lights on. But we haven't gotten to a point where, you know, we could say, okay, let's spend, you know, 50% of our time generating revenue and 50% on the company. Right now, a lot of it is, you know, pretty much 90% is on generating revenue, which doesn't give us a lot of leeway to kind of get out of that cycle that we're already in.
But do you feel like the work you're doing is actually supporting learning towards what you need to build the product? Or
yes, that's correct. So it's purely a revenue channel and we're spending 90% of our time there. So, you know, we're not getting the learnings and we're also not getting the time to kind of develop the other side. And that's kind of why it feels like we're just stuck in this little loop right now. You know, oh, let me make enough money so that I can eventually build my product. But you kind of keep doing that every month. And never kind of, you know, your revenue kind of seems to be here and we're not able to really scalably get to that phase where we could say, okay, well, you know, 80-20, 60-40, you know, and slowly kind of transition that process.
That's another reason to bifurcate though, the activities. So like, I think you keep conflating the activity in the agency and the activity from a startup. But you want to make sure you have distinct objectives. So as Sam said, like the agency is a revenue source, like any other job, you know, like, or any source of funding. And so mm-hmm. you can say like, if you were starting, let's say you were starting the startup today, let's say you had the idea today, you were working in an agency and there was nothing that you did until now. What would be your next steps? So through working on in this agency company, you realized, there's this possible market need and solution. What would be your next step?
So if we'd started off as an agency, my idea would have been to scale the agency enough so that we could start to allocate resources, excess spillover resources into kind of slowly developing the product and using our access to the clients as a way to learn from them and kind of really hone in on a product.
But that's effectively where you are. Like, so in other words, if you can let go of the past and just say like, what in fact are the conditions right now? I think it could liberate you to think of your objectives a lot more clearly, as opposed to thinking about the past and bringing that into this moment now. Because like Sam noted, like you have an amazing opportunity, whether or not you're getting the learnings from the clients, potentially you could form a JV with one of them where they're investing to create a pilot as Sam alluded. But you wouldn't think of that if you're thinking, well, we already started this relationship, you know, with that in mind, but didn't get there. Well, if you were starting as an agency right now, like what activities have you actually done with them to really see if they would be willing to help you build this, you know, for their own benefit and to be a pilot customer or something like that. So it's just a matter of like just changing the perspective just a little bit.
Yeah. And that goes back to what I was starting to articulate, which is that you've got to look at your value streams for the client work. If it's just revenue, then you could substitute just revenue. If it's absolutely just revenue, you have no other options of harvesting learnings or joint venture opportunities or like partnership, then you may as well find the most lucrative job for the least amount of time and, you know, headspace necessary, and you should all go get it, because it doesn't kill the company to do that. It doesn't mean just because you're generating revenue under somebody else's brand or your own brand that your company is suffering for it.
Right.
And that's one part. But to Jonathan's point, and what I think, if you are thinking like, hey, this is my agency, but the agency serves the product, not the other way around, then how can you curate your client book? How can you start having more honest conversations on a day-to-day basis that, like, you know, we're an agency and we're here to serve you, but we're actually, that's, you have to kind of turn that narrative a little bit, but you have to be the right client. You have to be willing to partner with what we're passionate about, and you have to be willing to test things with us or help us. Otherwise, this might not be a good fit. So it's a way to kind of either curate your client book so that they're understanding, because a lot of people have this very strong client is always right mentality, and you're just taking tickets from the client. But clients, especially in the agency world, they're very open to partnership, to exciting new things, to being the first adopter. Some of the clients are, not all of them, but, you know, first adopter on some new stuff. You could be cutting them deals. You could be saying, would you be willing to do pilot for this and that as we do the work? And the only thing stopping you from having those benefits is probably asking for them, I assume.
You're right. You know, we haven't really leaned into the agency model. We've just looked at it as, oh, this is where we're at right now. And perhaps changing the business, the core business model. Well, it's not really changing the business model. It's just really changing the mindset to lean into the current business model and rethink, well, instead of fighting this tension, kind of lying into that that kind of flow of the water, and then saying, okay, well, we can build, you know, a different route down the line versus trying to swim upstream and go back down the kind of the river that we really want to kind of go to.
And that makes sense. Sorry, Martin.
No, I was gonna say that makes total sense.
And you said that now you're forced to subcontract to agencies that have, you know, I don't know how large their book of business. But when I hear that, I'm excited, because that says, oh, maybe they can help see if all of their clients would be interested in a product where they can create a better mobile experience, you know, much more cost effectively, as you know, if it was a product. So like, as an agency, maybe you don't like being the subcontractor or having to have, you know, multiple masters, so to speak. But if it's attempt or to see if your product can get, you know, out there or have people contribute or whatever it is, they're a prime candidate potentially to have that conversation with.
Yeah. It's going back to your current book or all your current work, or you said 90% of your time is allocated, and asking, what can this work do to serve our company purpose and our company mission?
Mm-hmm.
And then starting to articulate that professionally and being really upfront about it in all your interactions. And that means that some doors are going to close to you, but that's what I'm talking about earlier in the show, where that's your gentle bending toward where you need to be, because you can have the revenue, you can align it with your purpose and mission, and you can be open about it with clients. And if they don't like it, then that's not the right client. And that's where your client work can slowly evolve so that it should be more exciting, because of the point of it, there's a real logic to bootstrapping and taking your own controlled revenue and reinvesting it. But scaling that up, like you mentioned, it only works if you don't hate it. Like the first thing about, which is, if you're getting up every day and you hate it, you can't push through that. So you've got to figure out how you can take what you're doing and make it more exciting and make it serve what you want and have that honest dialogue with your client book. Or if it's just making money and it can't happen, then make money somewhere else and then take the time you have to do what's exciting. Because I guarantee there's no avoiding the drudgery of making money. And funding and getting, I'm sure you've had that dog and pony show. Trying to get funding is just as drudgerous, if not more so, than just finding a six-figure job if you can get one or close to that, and funding yourself that way. So, you know, it's one of those things that you can't separate the capital. The energy has to come from somewhere. But I think, especially with the relationships you're building and the clients you have, just being more honest and asking them or asking yourself what they can do for you, and then asking it of them, is going to really start to move you in the right direction. I think bring back more excitement to the work.
Yeah, no, that's great advice. You're right. I think we look at ourselves a little distastefully rather than kind of leaning into it and saying, well, let's go with the flow. And that's kind of back to that perseverance issue, right? It's like, no, but that's our mission. Let's persevere. And maybe the perseverance is going with the flow, because you're still open and you still have the ability to work on the original product, even if you're not moving at the pace that you wanted to. So no, that's really great advice. I love that. It's just such a simple mindset shift, but critical.
Yeah. Are you working on the mobile experience for these clients, or are you just doing general marketing?
No, we build the entire mobile experience. Yeah. So it's a very hands-on job. That's why it takes up 90% of the time. You do sales, then you do account management, and then you're managing all of the parties in between. And then we're actually building it with our dev team. So we have our overseas dev team. We actually build, manage, run the whole experience and everything.
But if you had a mission statement, even like before it became an agency, it was improving the mobile experience, you know, 4X, you know, or however you, I don't want to put words.
We wrote it down on a piece of paper, make cool mobile experiences. I mean, that was really our initial goal, right? I mean, I know that's not the hardcore, how and what solution, but actually what we wanted to do at the end of the day was just make cool mobile experiences, and make it fun for the consumer and make it easy for the marketer.
And isn't that exactly what you're doing right now? Just not scalably, but like, in other words,
Yes, I think in the process, though, we're taking on all the difficulty. We've made it easy because we've taken on basically the workload of the brand, and so I think, yes, I think from an outside perspective, it looks like we've achieved our vision, but not really, because all we've done is taken on the pain that they would have had to deal with. So we're trying to get to a place where no one should feel any pain, and it should really just be, that cool experience at the end of the day.
Yeah. Maybe you should go back to your napkin and just write comma for everyone.
For everyone. Yeah. Yeah. For everyone.
I'll help you align the scalability aspect.
We honed on D2C because, we feel B2B will be eventual, but we found, at least from our insights, and I don't know if you guys have that, B2B consumers are less worried about the customer mobile experience journey. 20% of B2B sales happen on mobile, so almost none. But two, most B2B people have a ton of other priorities over, is this a beautiful interactive experience, which is, will it help my business? Whereas for the consumer, we can lean a lot more into kind of the experiential and storytelling aspect, which was, part of our initial vision and part of my background, creating those fantastic interactive learning experiences that are dynamic and interesting, all those things that we even wanted more when we were stuck at home during COVID, which is why I wish we were just born kind of a little 1 year earlier, and kind of got to a place where I think we could really help brands lean a lot more into that during COVID.
Yeah, I had a similar thing with the process. We do a lot of process work here at Truvel, and in the COVID thing, it really has brought process work up to the forefront. So I totally relate to you that I think there's a lot of people who are able to ride the wave of a lot of the change, and some people who are just right before it and thinking, man, if I just had 6 months to get my product put together or so. Yeah, I totally feel you on that one.
Yeah. I mean, some businesses won during COVID. You look at a company like Capsule, which is, delivering products to your house, killed it, right? Anybody that, was more physical really struggled. So, but no, great learnings. It has changed the world forever. So at the end of the day as well, we have to take that into account, that we're now much more into a hybrid society. And so if you're not catering to in-person and remote, you're losing potentially a pretty big segment. I think that's a great point of differentiation for existing products that did thrive during COVID. A lot of them, switched one way or the other, and less have actually adopted more of a hybrid model.
Yeah. Well,
go, Sam.
And this leads back to the point where we here at Truvel especially understand the pain of taking experiences and digitizing them, because that's how you're going to scale them. And that's what everyone needed during COVID for a lot of different complex things. And it's going to even become more of a greater need, because most people they're not trying to meet consultants in person or have people on site or do a lot of this bespoke, really heavy engagement type work. In a way, I really truly believe you're on the front end of how do we take something creating and experience the consultative or agency aspects of that and then digitizing it. And it's incredibly complex. And that brings back to the point where I, similar to you, where was a point in my career was leading up to Truvel, where consulting to try to generate revenue so I could sit in an ivory tower and work on a software product was feeling very painful and very drudgerous. Mm-hmm. And now I look at sort of consulting work with more of a zeal, because what we're trying to do in digitizing a consultative experience is extremely complicated and demanding. So every client that lets me come through the door, you know, I'm serving the client, but really I'm serving my company. I'm serving our mission, because I'm thinking, how do I continue every day? How do I automate what I'm doing right now? How do I codify what I'm doing? How do I generate this experience that's a real life opportunity into requirements for my application? Mm-hmm. And I think you said you spend 90% of your time, and you're starting to see the mindset shift based on this conversation. If you just take the 5% of your time and debrief every day with your team about how is the work we're doing right now something we can make into app requirements? How can we automate what we're doing? How can we make it what we're doing scalable? Every single interaction that's within your target market or in your space is basically fodder for learning. Mm-hmm. And I think if you kind of approach it with that mindset, it can make, even if the synthesis is only 5% of your job for a little while you're figuring it out, I think for me, at least, it's changed my perspective and made that 5% exciting enough to make the 90% totally feel different. So if you can kind of bend it that way, it's just kind of reinforcing, I guess, what we're talking about ultimately.
And then you could align the challenges you have to that objective. So for example, if your cost of developing is a challenge, like look for ways to solve for that. And as opposed to how much, you know, we can keep funding it or, you know, always balancing that. Like one way is look for a CTO or look for somebody who's willing, who maybe shares a similar vision, who's willing to come in for equity and build, you know, or something like that. So that way you feel like that's happening simultaneously. If not, you could also have the developers that you're currently using always also build or add the elements that would keep it scalable. Mm-hmm. So like which customizations are now making this product unscalable and which are core, or even test if it's possible. You know, like given the, you're getting tons of feedback about customizations, there's a reason for it. So like, you know, maybe you have to reassess some of your original hypothesis. But
right,
I wouldn't look at it again, you know, as we've been saying, as a total reorientation. You know, like you're actually been, sounds to us like you've been pretty engaged in your mission. You're just finding it that it's not leading to where you had envisioned going, mm-hmm. but that's okay. You know, that's a pretty simple course correction. Right. I mean, simple. You know, it's tactical. No, I'll say that.
Fundamental. Yeah. Simple, but.
Yeah. Altering the fundamentals. No, that's super helpful. Yeah. I think I'm sure you get this a lot, but also not only in trying to stay afloat, you do sometimes switch into that autopilot mode and you're not asking yourself these kinds of questions, because every day you're like, well, we got to stay open. Our goal right now is staying open. And maybe, you know, that as part of leaning into the agency, that's also no longer our day-to-day objective, right? Our day-to-day objective should shift from staying open and staying afloat to what else can we, you know, how are we gaining from the book of work that we're getting other than just keeping the lights on? Because that's also just really just a tough cycle to get stuck into, you know, oh, we got to make money this month. We got to, you know, and definitely can crush the soul a little bit.
Yeah. And I'll throw one more general principle on top of it before I want to turn it over to you and see how you're feeling overall, which is that autopilot is basically taking you out of being radically honest. So from this conversation, we would basically, you have to think about being radically honest every day. And that's in the little things. It's every client email. It's every client interaction. It's all the time you're spending. If you're not being honest in those interactions about, am I enjoying this? Am I not enjoying this? And how do I let somebody know that this is not where I want to be and not what I want to be doing? And this is where it's in the moment to moment, checking in with yourself. And that's what's going to guide you to where you are gently and not having to do a whole like, I hate everything right now because I haven't been articulating or communicating. And I feel like I just have to light the whole thing on fire and start over. It's really because there's so many interactions where somebody asks you for something, somebody makes a demand on your time. And instead of checking in and being honest about this doesn't align with what I want to be doing right now, yeah. You just say yes and you let it go. And it's by slowly being honest in those micro interactions on your day-to-day where you're going to slowly guide you and your team into a place where you feel more aligned with what is honestly enjoyable for you. And you will help to kind of determine whether clients are a good fit, whether the work is a good fit, and whether the things are exciting or not exciting, because it's that autopilot, like you just said. And what it really disables is your honesty. And if you can't be honest from a moment to moment basis, then you're going to lead yourself into places where you didn't want to be. And I think that's where you're finding yourself now.
And a symptom of it, a typical symptom, is labeling. So like when you start labeling, we're an agency, we are not a product, you know, like we're not a start, we're not working. Like I had said bifurcate, but that was, I wasn't actually listening to the thrust of what the challenge was, because to me, it sounds like there's a ton of overlap between what you're doing right now and what you set out to do. It can't be a complete, you know, this is wasteful, this is, you know, not helpful. The missions are too similar. So, you know, there's a tendency to label it as, I'm not where I want to be, this is all a problem, as opposed to within each thing that I'm doing, you know, a slight shift might actually make it much more usable. Mm-hmm.
No. Yeah. It's nice to have, you know, outside opinion looking into this. Cause I think, you know, also three people, you know, in a room together talking about the same problems, you also kind of start to develop groupthink and group situation. So, No, thank you guys. I really appreciate it. I think that you've kind of given me a lot to think about, a lot to bring back to the team, a lot to kind of restructure a little bit our approach, but also, you know, more heavily our mindset.
Great. Do you have any other last minute burning questions for us then? It sounds like you're in a good place to process.
No, I think you guys have really kind of helped us exactly that. Give us some time to think and process and adjust the approach, but like I said, mainly the mindset.
Yeah. Well, Martin, thank you so much for coming on the show. It was a wonderful conversation and we really appreciate it.
Thank you guys.
Thanks everyone for tuning in, and we'll talk to you next week.